fifth meeting of the Minnesota Commerce Finance and Policy Committee for the House. We're going to go into recess until about 8:30. I've been in communication with Lead Her, and we have some members who will be joining us via Zoom. We're just making sure everybody gets an ample opportunity to be able to do that. And she is planning to be en route as well. So we're just going to kind of stand by here. We don't have a lot of bills that are ahead of us today, and I don't know that they're overly controversial, so we should be able to finish within the normal time that we have for the committee. And members are kind of coming in along the way here. And so, again, we've advised Lead Her as well as our team. If people can't get here safely, by all means, we're going to allow the Zoom option and things here this morning. So with that, we're going to stand in recess till the call of the chair till about 8:30. Thank you. Members, I'm going to bring us back into to the committee here. I appreciate, again, everyone's accommodations for the weather. This is Minnesota. It's also tournament time, so we should not expect anything other than what we're getting for weather right now. But it is what it is. And thankfully, everyone has gotten here safely, and we're working with people to get them in on Zoom as well. So we will continue to be bringing folks in. Just for the record, for those who can't make it today, they will be excused from the meeting. That where we understand weather is a situation that no one can control. And again, we're going to jump around just a little bit on the order here because some of the members have committees elsewhere and are maybe presenting bills or taking care of things at that point. We have four bills that are before us today, two of them dealing with petroleum-related products. And we're going to take Representative Kosnick's bill first. So if you take a look on the agenda, it is number five, excuse me, my bad, number four, House File 247. And again, we do have Representative Kosnick via Zoom this morning, and he will present the bill. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to move that bill before the committee, and there's also a DE amendment. And so with that, I'm going to move House File 247 to before the committee.
Approve the minutes.
257. Representative Kreisha, we'll get to the minutes a little bit later on. I want to just kind of get business underway here. And what we'll do is we'll move that before the committee to be referred to the committee, to the general register. There is a DE amendment. But before that, Representative Kosnick, do you want to speak to the bill and give the committee some background? Representative Kosnick, welcome to the committee. Representative Kosnick, you may need to unmute yourself. Apparently, we're having some technical difficulties with Representative Kosnick at this point. I'd like to have a motion to lay the bill on the table to pick it up later. Can I get a motion? A motion by Representative Davids. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? All right. We will then bring up the first bill on the agenda. But before we do that, let's go ahead and take care of the minutes from the previous meeting of March 4th. Representative Kreisha, have you had a chance to review those minutes?
I have had a chance, and so moved.
Representative Kreisha moves the minutes from the committee meeting of March 4th. Any questions, discussions, corrections? Seeing none, hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. We are going to revert to item three on the agenda, House File 737. And this is a bill by Representative Bjorn Olson. And I will bring this before the committee, sir, for consideration. And it is House File 737 to be brought before the committee to be referred to the Committee on Environment, Finance, and Policy. Representative Olson, welcome to the committee. If you'll background the committee on the bill, we'll proceed accordingly. Perfect. Representative Olson, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So House File 737 is one of those situations where I'm not an artist. I've seen a couple paintings in my life, but I got a phone call from a constituent who said, Representative Olson, I cannot make my product any longer in the state of Minnesota. I said, whoa, what are you talking about? He says, well, I make cadmium pastels. So you know how you've got, you can go and buy your oil pastels and you can get a whole big 99 different color pastels for 10 bucks. So he makes the cadmium based ones and he says, I can't make it in Minnesota any longer. This was back in July. And I said, what are you talking about? Well, the state inadvertently or advertently just made it so they made a blanket statement that said everything is now against the law, which there is good reason. Cadmium is a heavy metal. Lead's a heavy metal. We all know this. But what it did is it inadvertently excluded every single art supply that is used that uses cadmium for it. Now, Western art culture is highly dependent on cadmium-based pastels, paints, and other items. I talked to an artist here in St. Paul, and he said that half of the colors that he uses in his profession he can no longer purchase in the state of Minnesota. And so this professional artist can't perform his duties and make art for us to enjoy. And so I looked at it and I said, well, this isn't okay. I looked into it. He explained to me that the way that they produce the cadmium-based stuff today is an incredibly safe way of doing it, whereas if you had consumed or inadvertently consumed cadmium paint in the 1940s and 50s, you would have had a real big problem. Today, you would basically just send out the same color that you consumed. That's exactly what he told me, in other words. So it's a relatively safe, it's much safer than it used to be, and we really need to ensure that Western art culture continues in the state of Minnesota. We're the only government in the entire universe that doesn't exempt it for this purpose. You go to the European Union has said that cadmium's illegal. They can't make cadmium-based products, and then they have an asterisk that says for the purpose of art supplies. And so we really need to do this today and send this off to the Environment Committee. Mr. Chair, I do have an amendment, an author's amendment to.
Representative Olson, is yours the A2 amendment?
It is.
I will move the A2 amendment to House File 737 for Representative Olson to get a bill in the form he wishes. All those in favor of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye. Representative Katizo, what's
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm totally fine with author's amendments, but this one just seems a little bit more expansive given the introduction that you just kind of walked us through, it being with paint, and there adds a number of other exceptions. So I'm hoping you could just give us a little bit more background on some of the other items listed here.
Representative Olson.
Perfect. Thank you, Representative. I really appreciate that question. So this is an amendment that looks very similar to the one that the Senate adopted last week in the Commerce Committee. So when we first drafted it, I'm like, I didn't know a whole lot about art. And so you can see the original one basically just exempts paint or pastels containing cadmium. Apparently, there's a lot of other art supplies that are necessary. And so I was working with some very intelligent people who know about the art industry, and they added a significant number of cadmium. And then with regard to the ink pens and mechanical pencils, there are high class, like, specialty pencils and specialty pens that do contain some lead in the ballpoint and that kind of stuff. So there is, in fact, some lead in pens. And then striking the keys, basically just that is an issue that when they're soldering the electronic components within the key fob, they use lead for that. And so whereas you don't really want your kids to suck on keys anyways, because when I look at if one of my child were to be sucking on my keys, I would say the flu. I wouldn't necessarily say lead poisoning. But at the same time, there is no current alternative for that. And so we think that's a pretty important thing to exempt as well.
Representative Katizwa, to follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that. I was a little bit confused about the ink pens and mechanical pencils, but if they're in terms of more of an art supply, but is that kind of those types of things that our students use in schools and it might be like chewing on the cap, or is there, has the MPACA been in conversation about this amendment when they presented over in the Senate? Do you know that?
They were in,
Representative Olson.
So sorry, Mr. Chair. They were in fact they had conversations with the Senate when this amendment was. They actually testified in there, and I think we've got someone here today who's to testify, and they can maybe provide a little bit more information on, from my understanding, the ink pen in the ballpoint. They might have some lead in it, depending on how it is. I don't know if that's a Bic pen or if that is a specialty fountain pen. I'm not entirely sure.
Representative Katizwa, to follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If the MPCA is here, that would be helpful for me to hear from them before we move forward on the A2, if that's all right.
Representative Olson, maybe what we should do is get the bill in the form that you wanted, and then maybe we could start taking some of those other questions, because it's probably getting into more of the technical aspects of that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are you okay with that, Representative Kutuzwatun? Okay. With that, all those in favor of the author's A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. To the bill as amended, Representative Olson, do you have some testifiers today that will speak to the bill as amended?
We do have a number of testifiers, sure. Mr. Chair.
Oh, hang on. Representative Smith.
We do have one more amendment to move. Do you want to wait?
We can take that, and we can take it at the end. I will defer to the author of how he would like to do that. I'm open to whatever.
I just didn't want to pass by.
Yep, nope, it's not. It's on my list. I've got it right here. And we can take it now if that's the wishes of the author and yourself. I know it's an amendment that you two have been working on. I'm fine with however you want to do it. Mr. Representative
Chair.
Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is an amendment that I've been talking with Representative Smith about. Can we, let's get our testimony, and then we can discuss the amendment and take the amendment.
It's fine.
Representative Smith, you okay with that?
Fine. Yeah.
All right, thank you. To the bill as amended, the first testifier I have on my list is Darren Reaney or Reaney, who is an artist, and if he is present today, we'll have him come forward and provide testimony. And sir, is it Reaney or Reaney? I
Reaney.
Apologize. Mr. Reaney, I would invite you to the, and thank you for coming to the committee today, if you will go ahead and state your name for the record and then provide your testimony for the committee. Again, welcome, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, representatives. My name is Darren Reaney. I'm here with my business partner, Scott Fares, who is the fellow that's not Representative Olson. We're the co-owners of Wet Paint Artist Materials and Framing. We're a retailer at Supply Store on Grand Avenue in St. Paul. We will be celebrating 50 years of serving our community next year. But the inclusion of professional art supplies in the Minnesota law meant to protect children and families from lead and cadmium makes us wonder if we will be in business much past that. We are already feeling the impact of this law at the cash register. Artist paint and associated supplies make up 30% of our annual sales. As one of the few independent art supply shops left in the state, this lead and cadmium ban puts us at risk of losing a significant portion of these sales to competitors in other states, including just a half hour from our front door. We have already lost much of our online market share nationally since lead and cadmium-based colors are freely sold in all other states, even California. Lead and cadmium-based colors are essential tools on the artist's palette. Lead white is flexible and durable. It's the reason so many painted portraits have lasted centuries. Cadmium colors are warm and opaque, and uniquely soften when mixed with other colors. They're the best at representing the effects of natural light. Painters and instructors, our customers at Wet Paint, stake their livelihoods on the availability of these colors. Every tube of artist paint is clearly labeled with its contents because the properties of each pigment or blend of pigments are critical for the artist. Lead and cadmium are not used in artist paints as a secret filler the way they might be when hidden in kids' toys and jewelry. They are prized for their specific characteristics. Painters pay a premium for these colors because their unique properties cannot be duplicated by other pigments. If there were viable alternatives, we'd already be selling them because these are expensive colors. These are not cheap pigments used in art supplies for children. Importantly, the question of banning lead and cadmium-based artist colors was already asked and answered years ago by the EU. As Bill Moran will later testify, the science does not support this ban. Minnesota, home to one of the most vibrant art scenes in the country, according to exploreminnesota.com, is the only place in the world where artists and art supply manufacturers are banned from using these critically important tools due to the overreach of Bill HF 2310. We hope this will be remedied soon. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Would you like to speak to the bill as well?
No, I worked with this statement with Darren.
Okay. Members, questions of the testifier this morning? Seeing none and hearing none, thank you for your time. And
you.
We'll move on to our next testifier, Kirk Kudalka from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And as he's making his way to the testifiers table, I do want to give you an update. We're still experiencing some technical difficulties with Representative Kosnick, and Representative Nolan West of the committee has also joined us via Zoom for full disclosure for everyone present, including members. Welcome to the committee. If you'll identify yourself and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Kirk Kadalka. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on the bill. I did want to go over a little bit of history on the bill, the law that was passed a few years ago and had gone through the legislative sessions twice, just to explain why certain products are on there. What we have concern over the list is the items are because they have high lead and cadmium amounts. And even small amounts of lead and cadmium in household products can cause serious problems for children and others. No amount of lead is considered safe in children. High levels of lead can cause behavioral problems, short attention spans, slower growth, and decreased coordination. And because many people know about the harm of lead, what happens is cadmium is often used as a replacement. And that's why the law is a lead and cadmium bill, particularly in inexpensive jewelry. In many cases, there are alternatives, which are safer. However, cadmium dust and can contain cause vomiting, diarrhea, abdominal pain, muscle aches, and organ damage. The Department of Health leads lead risk assessments at home and looks at the data. And while it does look at really at 1 and 2 year olds, we know there are exposures to much older children. And from the data that from our Department of Health, along with the City of New York and King County in Washington, there are some common consumer products that end up when they look at investigations of why there are elevated levels of blood, lead in blood. Those include ceramics, keys, chalk, jewelry, pots and pans, and costume jewelry items, which is why the list consists of what it is currently in law. What I'd like to focus a little bit of time on is where there are alternatives. And so we were asked by the legislature last year to do a report on a number of items that are in the amendment, including mechanical pencils and pens. What we really want to stress is the full exemptions of these laws to really stop the drive to innovation and what are their alternatives. The report outlines, for instance, where there are alternatives for the lead component of pens being made. There can be a transition to it and make sure there are supplies there. And in use of mechanical pencils, there are many types of pencils that do not include lead that are available. So the question is, why continue with lead when we know we have safe alternatives? When we look at keys, we also see similar pieces with key fobs where we know there are non-lead solder. And I know much of the conversation so far has been about the direct exposure to these products, but we're also looking about the production phase where the workers and neighbors and releases from facilities with lead, and also on the disposal side when we're looking at what is in landfills or our wastewater treatment plants and having to deal with it. And that's where something such as solder becomes an issue because they do deteriorate when in the landfill. When we look at keys and that, we do see alternatives in blades. Department of Health had done a study, for example, where only 20% of vehicle keys have lead in it compared to other types of keys. There is an alternative. There are businesses doing the act of making keys with not having the risk of lead in it, which is one of those things the Department of Health has seen as high levels of exposure for children. That's why we believe that we want to have conversations about is there additional time that are needed to make sure that we find and move to that full adoption of those safer alternatives. I know there will be conversations about, well, the test used the machine, XRF machine will be referred to as, that it's just the coating, it's masking it. It's not. We've used examples of keys that we knew clearly had lead, had the coating on it, and the machine had no problem detecting the lead. We can carve off part of the coating, so we have a non-coated and coated. The machine picks it up the same on both sides. We use this machine for many times to also send it to the lab to do additional tests, and we have found consistently across product lines it be consistent. The Department of Health uses it at homes to find lead under multiple layers of architectural paint to be able to determine it. They're proven models. There are alternatives out there, What we'd like to continue to work with folks, and we have meetings with a number of the organizations that you'll hear from today, of let's learn more about the alternatives and how do we move that way when we know there are existing alternatives. Thank you, Chair and committee members, for the amount of time today.
Thank you for your time as well, sir. Any questions for the testifier this morning? Members? All right, thank you. Our next testifier is Josh Fisher from the Alliance of Automotive Innovation. And again, as Mr. Fisher is making his way, an update, we are now also joined on Zoom by Lead Her, in addition to Representative West. Welcome to the committee. They'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair O'Driscoll, members of the committee, my name is Josh Fisher with the Alliance for Automotive Innovation. We are a trade association that represent the automakers producing the most vehicles sold in the U.S. We also represent auto suppliers, mobility, and technology companies. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today, and thank you to Representative Olson for his leadership on this issue. Vehicle keys and key fobs are covered by the lead and cadmium law, a well-intentioned law that is overly broad and does need to be adjusted. Auto Innovators has taken a deep look into lead and cadmium and keys and key fobs and provided that information to PCA as they developed their report. Auto Innovators recommends lifting the ban on lead and cadmium in keys and key fobs. We view this as a common sense approach which will align Minnesota with the rest of the United States. Banning lead and cadmium in keys when there are no alternatives available in sufficient quantities should not be a high priority since exposure risk for these items appears to be minimal. With regard to electronic fobs, the lead in the fobs is in the interior electrical components that are not easily accessible. With regard to the minor lead and the brass content of keys, many keys are plated with other metals to change their color, and the brass is expected to be on the interior of the key. There are other regulatory structures in place to minimize the exposure risk from keys and automotive key fobs, and Minnesota's law is not consistent with those other regulatory structures. As mentioned in the report, California's 2001 settlement on lead content in keys effectively brought the lead content on keys down to below 1.5%. At which point warnings of risk to Californians are not required. Additionally, the European Union's End-of-Life Vehicles Directive governs the presence of lead and cadmium in the vehicle components, including keys, and sets low thresholds for those substances' use. We recommend that Minnesota consider aligning standards for lead and keys with these provisions. Being out of line with California in the EU is certainly a decision, and we would think it'd be much better for Minnesota to align themselves with these other structures. So we encourage the House to adopt this amendment. It's a common sense approach that will head off disruptions that will occur should the ban go into effect. So in conclusion, Auto Innovators believes that amendments to Minnesota's lead and cadmium and keys law will lead to more effective implementation of the statute and improve workability and feasibility of a law for the industry. Thank you for your time and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, questions of Mr. Fisher this morning. Representative Cortez-Watun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for being here with us, Mr. Fisher. I appreciate your testimony. I'm just looking for a little bit of clarity. Since this bill has been passed, what has the industry been doing with the keys and keychains and key rings? When I'm reading the existing statute, it says that it doesn't apply to covered products if they have that coating that I think our last testifier from the MPCA mentioned, because that is preempted by federal law. So I'm curious, is that how it's been working so far, or you've already found a solution and now you want to go backwards in terms of consumer protections? I'm missing what's...
Sure, so...
Mr. Fisher.
Mr. Chair, Representative, key blades and key fobs do contain lead and cadmium, and our understanding is that automotive keys, the thresholds of lead and cadmium are above the standard currently in Minnesota law. And so we are covered, and that's why last year we requested an extension of 1 year so we could actually deliver new vehicles to the state. Otherwise, we could not deliver vehicles because if you can't deliver a key, you can't drive the vehicle. So we needed a one-year extension. And you know, the auto industry is always looking for better and safer alternatives. We've taken mercury switches out of vehicles, mercury out of headlamps, chromium out of nuts and bolts. So we're always looking to innovate. But you know, our members have told us there's no replacement available, especially for key fobs. The heat... When you're soldering the heat, you have to move the circuit boards further apart, and that's really tough in a small key fob. So, you know, the standards in California and the EU are still strict standards. The challenge is Minnesota's standard is much higher than those. And so our keys are out of compliance here in Minnesota when they're not out of compliance anywhere else, frankly, in the world. similar to the pain argument, right? So that's where we are. So we're always looking for safer alternatives. They just do not exist right now. And we believe these other thresholds do provide safety and protection for consumers and a level of achievability for the industry.
Excuse me, Representative Cherkutuz, what's your
own? Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that. That's helpful for me to just clarify a little bit with that one-year extension and just kind of get all the ducks in a row. I do want to note for the record, Mr. Chair, that a Republican has brought a bill that wants to bring Minnesota in line with California. And I am just shocked. Shocked.
Representative Katizawa, too, and I can answer that in a couple of different ways this morning. It may well be the weather. It may also be even the blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while, as the old cliche goes. But I will defer.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative
Chair.
Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Katizawa, too. You might want to join the Environment Committee. This happens actually quite frequently after some of the legislation that passed last year, so it's not that big of a surprise.
We all learn something, don't we? Other questions for Mr. Fisher this morning? Thank you, Mr. Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And with that, we're going to go to the next testifier.
Mr. Chair.
Bill Morgan. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Kreisha.
I'm sorry. My apologies. And to the testifier.
Representative Kreisha, did you want the testifier back? Do you want Mr. Fisher back?
Well, we'll see if the bill author can. So to the bill author, I'm just, are you aware of any pending lawsuits right now?
Representative Olson.
I'm not aware of any. Maybe Mr. Fisher is.
Mr. Fisher, did you hear the question? Would you like Representative Kreisha to repeat the question?
Mr. Chair, could you please repeat the question, Representative
Kreisha?
Thank you. So in the research I did, I did not see any active lawsuits against this. It looks like you're just taking the right proactive steps. Am I correct in that, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Fisher.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we're talking about lawsuits specifically in Minnesota? Yeah, because last year when the legislature passed the extension to delay the implementation of this ban, but that expires, I believe, July of this year. So at that point, we expect to be out of compliance, and I would imagine there could potentially be lawsuits following that.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Fisher.
Thank you.
And our next testifier is Bill Morgan from the Arts and Creative Materials Institute and the Written Instrument Manufacturing Association. That's a lot to say this morning. Mr. Morgan, welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's Bill Moran, no G. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for taking my testimony today. As the chairman has indicated, I am legal counsel for the Art and Creative Materials Institute and for the Writing Instrument Manufacturers Association. I'm going to be focusing on Amendment A2 and specifically lines 1.2 through 1.7. I think as we've kind of developed through this, and you've heard from Mr. Kadelka from the MPCA, we've had dialogue with Mr. Kadelka through the Writing Instrument Manufacturers Association. We are in the process of engaging with the MPCA on behalf of the Art and Creative Materials Institute with regard to the paints and pastels, but I'd like to address both of those issues. This legislation was passed in 2023. If we go through the legislative history, there's very little information regarding the scope of this statute. There is a litany of 15 different broad product definitions that come into play that are effectively banned by the statute. In 2024, we did have dialogue with MPCA. A moratorium was instituted for this year, similar to the Keys, and there was a study done by the MPCA. No scientific analysis was done with regard to pens and mechanical pencils. Those were the only items that were part of that moratorium. As the individual on behalf of the auto industry indicates, that ban expires on July 1st, 2025 of this year. With regard to pens and mechanical pencils, I've submitted some materials for the committee, including some scientific studies that were done. At this point, this MPCA has not come forward with any scientific studies to establish that pens and mechanical pencils present any measurable health risk to the population and to children in particular. With regard to pens and other writing instruments, this issue came up before the Consumer Product Safety Commission in the late 2010s, early 2010s. Study was done, and the Consumer Product Safety Commission did not include pens within their ban or limitation on lead with regard to children's products. With regard to the mechanical pencils, again, small amount of lead in those. Those mechanical pencils are high-end pencils. Those are pencils that are used by engineers and architects and others, draftsmen, in connection with their profession. These are not children's products. These are not products that are made available to children. And so right now, for an organization that leans into the science, which the MPCA should do, they chose not to consider the science here. Similarly, with regard to pens, or with regard to the paints and the professional artist materials, as Mr. Rennie indicated, the European Union conducted a study back in the 2013-2014 timeframe, specifically addressing cadmium in professional artist materials and paints, at the request of the country of Sweden to ban cadmium in professional artist paints. They conducted a study when that request for a ban occurred and concluded that there was no measurable health risk from cadmium in professional artist materials and refused the ban. Here we have it turned on its head. Under this statute, under 325E3892, we have a ban first with no studies. And now we have to conduct studies after the fact in order to trim down this statute in order to have it recognize the practicalities and the impact on the state of Minnesota. With this ban, if it goes into effect with regard to pens and mechanical pencils, we're the only place in the world that you can't buy a Bic pen with a small amount of lead in the tip. You can't buy any paints with cadmium in them, although right now the ban is in effect with regard to artist materials. So for those reasons, we request that you approve this Amendment A2 and pass it along for further consideration. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan. Members, questions for the testifier? Thank you, Mr. Morgan. Seeing no questions. Our final testifier who has signed up in advance, Dave Johnson. And then if there's any members of the public that are here or wishing to testify, they also can let us know, and we will give you an opportunity to testify this morning as well. So Mr. Johnson and then members of the public. Mr. Johnson, welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dave Johnson. I'm a partner at the Fagry Drinker Law Firm, and thank you for the opportunity to both submit a written letter and to testify before the committee today on the amendment. And to clarify, the amendment does remove keys from the ban, so it isn't just the key solder, but it's also keys. I represent two key manufacturers, Dormakaba and JMA USA, who together constitute approximately 60% of the United States key market, and the Hillman Group, a nationwide distributor of keys and hardware supplies. As has been previously testified, the lead and cadmium ban enacted in 1993 prohibits a number of consumer products, primarily children's products, but also applies to keys. And as currently written, that legislation bans every blade-style key and key fob in the state. In addition, that law bans selling keys for house, office, and business use, sold with new or used cars, boats, motorcycles, ATVs, UTVs, golf carts, agricultural machinery, or other motorized vehicles utilizing a key. And there are representatives of those groups who are here today in support of the amendment. It also prohibits selling keys with office furniture with locking drawers, locking toolboxes, truck toolboxes, work trucks with keys, industrial equipment, refrigerators or freezers that have keys, padlocks, and any other application where a key is sold with a product. In sum, all of those are currently not in compliance with Minnesota law. As background, almost all metal keys are made of purchased or smelted brass, which contains lead levels between 0.95% and 1.5%. It is used because of its balance between strength and use and its ability to be machine cut. The lead in brass facilitates machinability and is not easily corroded. Key cores and key blades need to be of the same alloy so that the hardness of the two metals match in operation. If one is harder than the other, damage will occur. Either the key core will become too hard or the softer key, for the softer key, and the key becomes deformed, misshapen, or breaks. The key blade is too hard and it destroys the rotor mechanism. Either way, without matching materials, the likelihood of lock functioning is greatly increased. No other state, with the exception of California, bans keys or lead and cadmium content in keys. And our standard currently in effect is significantly more stringent than the California standard, which the industry has met. I do want to talk a little bit about alternatives. We do not believe there are commercially viable alternatives on the currently in use or available anytime soon. As was previously testified, DHS did do a study regarding keys using a surface testing method. That study stated that keys are not intended for kids and has been characterized, I think, in this committee and in previous committees as saying that there are alternatives that exist, and that's what this study proves. In the Senate hearing, in the other body, I don't know how we refer to it here, the testimony was that there were detectable levels of lead found in 64% of objects, so around 35 to 36 did not show having lead in the key blades. There was further testimony, so they concluded that there was currently a market. I would just say this about the XRF testing method. Not only is it not the method, the method used in the study, it is not the method that the PCA has publicly said that it uses for compliance. That's an acid digestion method that analyzes the entire key, but that the industry characterizes an XRF testing method as a surface sensitive test, meaning it only analyzes the surface content of an object. And for this method to be an accurate reflection of an entire sample, the surface needs to be representative of the entire volume of the sample. In the case of silver and nickel plated keys analyzed in the DHS study, it is not. Many keys, most notably automotive keys, when this was previously testified to as well, are made of brass and are silver or nickel plated. With these plated keys, the surface material contains minimal or no lead, while the brass content of the core is masked. This appears to be the case in the DHS study, as vehicle keys have a significantly lower lead detection rate than door keys. The DHS study further proves the point when it notes the relative difference in lead detection rates is significantly more in gold keys than in silver, since silver keys are silver or nickel plated and gold keys are not. In both instances, the core metal is the same. We've actually, one of the clients has actually taken the plated keys and done more intensive analysis to show, again, that the core of all of those keys has lead and brass content that would be above Minnesota's standard. And so, we've had a number of conversations with the department starting late last year, a lot of discussion about what the alternatives are. And the testimony today by the MPCA is that alternatives have existed for months. We've asked them to identify what those are, and they have not identified what they believe the alternatives are. They've asked us to go identify what we believe the alternatives are, and we've engaged in extensive research, not only through the law firm's scientific database, but both the manufacturers and the distributor have searched, for any literature it could find. It's found one study currently being conducted in Europe, which we have shared with the department, that shows the partial results of the beginning of their trying to identify an alternative. And what that study has found, and we have shared it with the department and happy to share it with the committee, is that overall the lead containing reference material and the lead reduced materials at above 1% show some good machinability and broaching. Any lead reduced alloy with lead content less than 1% proved to be unsuitable for the production of the cylinder cores. and every single alloy that these folks could identify as a possible alternative is currently non-compliant with Minnesota law. So our testimony is that there are no alternatives currently on the market, and there are none for the foreseeable future. And if we are not able to change the law, one of two things will happen. Currently, all keys in the state of Minnesota will currently continue to be non-compliant, or all key sales to the state of Minnesota will have to cease. So we look forward to having conversations with policymakers, with the MPCA, and others, and hopefully we can find a path forward, because I don't think any of us want that. So with that, I'm happy to answer any testimony or questions.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I don't have any member questions at this time. Representative Perryman.
I have a question regarding the chain, manufacturers down to retail. What will that do to retailers that currently, and I am one of them, I feel like I should be a testifier today, that sell key fobs, that repair key fobs? We take the shelves, we do it responsibly, and sometimes we get ladies and men going, thank goodness you do it. So how will that trickle down to the retail? Will we be accountable to take it all out, the service, or is that going to be the position or the responsibility of the manufacturers?
Mr. John, before I have you answer, I'm hoping that your answers can be brief, because we do have some other bills ahead of us here today. Mr. Johnson.
Currently, the law prohibits either the sale, distribution, or offer of use for any keys with lead and cadmium above those percentage levels. So the distribution would be illegal, my understanding is, so would any sale or other use. That'd be my take.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Commit.
Representative Faulkner.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Olson. I'm just wondering, have you worked with the MPCA on addressing the concerns for the products?
Representative Faulkner, is it a question to the bill author or to the testifier?
Author, please.
Okay. Yep. If you don't mind, we take public testimony, then we're going to go right into discussion of the bill. So if it's okay, then I wanted to also take Representative Smith. We're close, real close. Okay.
Jumping up a bit.
Is there anyone from the public who wishes to testify on the matter before the committee? House File 373 as amended. Anyone wishing to testify on that? All right. Let's take the A3 amendment, and then we'll go to member testimony on the bill once we've got it in its entirety. And Representative Faulkner, you will be the first. Representative Smith, to your A3 amendment, sir.
Yeah, thank you. I'd like to move the A3 amendment. I've talked with the author about this. This is specifically on the cadmium paint that was discussed earlier before those other. This is putting an age restriction on that, 18, prove that you are an adult when you buy these. One, to make sure that children aren't exposing themselves to this cadmium paint when they maybe don't know about it like professional artists do. But also, adult artists will be much more responsible in washing the cadmium paint, and so this paint doesn't get into wastewater. So hopefully it's viewed as a friendly amendment, and that's what the amendment does.
Representative Smith, we're about to find out if it's friendly or not. To the bill author.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So whereas I don't know if, I think Hobby Lobby, I think that Michaels would easily be able to make this happen. Mike, I would love it if we could have the testifiers from a small business come up and tell us how that would affect them to have to check.
Very quickly, Representative Olson, if we could have them come up. And I don't want to do like the essay of like 100 words or less kind of a thing, but 100 words or less would be fabulous this morning. Welcome back to the committee. You'll state your name, and then I can have Representative Smith or Representative Olson repeat the question if you need it. Go ahead.
It's okay. Fine. Darren Rennie from Wet Paint again. Very quickly.
Again. Very quickly.
Wow. It doesn't make any difference. It's adults buying the paint. I cannot think of a time in my 30-plus years history selling art supplies that I've had anyone under 18 purchasing a cadmium-based color. They're expensive. The kids coming in to buy paint are not looking to buy this paint. So if this is going to get it across the goal line, sure. But we maintain that the science doesn't support it regardless. But it's neither here nor there.
Representative Olson.
Well, then I would find that as a friendly amendment if it's going to get this bill across the aisle.
Representative Heinzman, Chair Heinzman.
Mr. Chair, I apologize for dragging this out longer, but I am curious, and this may be a discussion for another committee, but what would be the penalty if someone were to have made a mistake if this amendment was adopted? Would we have retailers potentially being held to the same level that, say, another retailer would be for selling cigarettes to a minor? Or what are we talking about exactly? We're talking about paint at the moment, but I'm not entirely sure what the penalties might look like. I'm not clear on that if we were to adopt this amendment.
Representative Heinzman, there is no reference to other statute for penalty in it, but I will go to the amendment author and ask him what he was contemplating. Representative Smith.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. There's no specific statute I'm referencing here, but it's enforced by the department. If there's complaints, I imagine it'll go through a similar process.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Until there's some kind of clarification on what that penalty would actually look like, I would be a no. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Fitzgibbon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do have a nice law book here right in front of me. The enforcement section of the existing law 325E.3892 is subdivision 3, and PCA has enforcement over the existing statute. So I don't know if a violation were to be reported, what the MPCA would do, and if the testifier is still here, I don't know if he
Representative Katizwatun, I do not question your research, but I do want to just get confirmation for the committee's benefit from nonpartisan staff, if we
right.
could.
That's helpful. Thank you.
And I believe that Ms. Pompeo is joining us via Zoom this morning as well.
Aaron members, I am. Can you hear me?
Go ahead, Ms. Pompeo.
Yes, the citation from Representative Katizwatun is right, that subdivision 3 of that section is the enforcement section. It can be enforced by the PCA, Commerce, or Health. They would coordinate on it, and there's a variety of enforcement statutes that it cross-references, including the Commissioner of Commerce's ability, subpoena ability, fine ability, and the Attorney General's ability.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the testimony from nonpartisan. I would just point out that in some cases, MPCA enforces fines for some things that you would think would be maybe not very serious, in the upwards of $10,000. I'm just suggesting it would be nice to have more clarification on that. I'm not sure this amendment's ready for prime time. A disclaimer, a number of other alternatives might be a better choice.
Representative Olson, your wishes.
We're going to environment next, and so I think we can take the amendment here, because if it's going to get, I mean, right now, to Representative Katizwatun's comment, it's not only a Republican trying to align with California, it's actually a Republican working with two DFL members, so I'm actually outnumbered 67% to 33%. So if we could take the amendment now, and then we can work on it again, make sure that we get any penalties to ensure that it's not a $10,000 fine for selling one $80 tube of paint to a highly enthused 17-year-old, I think that we can do that. We'll figure it out in environment, and we'll take it, figure it out in environment, and send it to the floor.
All right. No follow-up questions with that. Any other comments from the amendment author?
I mean, maybe just to say, because the ability of this, the importance of this. I mean, so the reference to the cadmium paint report from the EU has been made. I struggled with this. I read that report, and while they chose not to ban this, it does say that if we banned cadmium paint, there would be 16 fewer cases of breast cancer a year. So this is like something that has been studied and shown, like there are effects, which is why I think it's important to keep it out of the hands of kids. We've heard that kids probably won't get this anyway in most cases. I think this is a pretty good amendment to have in place.
To the A3 amendment offered by Representative Smith, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails, and the bill is now amended with the A3 amendment. No public testifiers. Any other committee discussion? Seeing none and hearing none. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, you were. Yes, I will be good. Go ahead, Representative Faulkner. This is your first time speaking to the committee, so we're just dying to hear what you have
thank
to say.
You. Thank you, Chair. Just with the number of concerns that Representative Olson. Just the number of concerns the MPCA has brought up. I was just wondering if you had worked with them ahead of time during the drafting or before bringing this to the bill or to the committee. Representative Olson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question. I did, in fact, sit down with the MPCA, one of their representatives. We had a conversation, and we identified that the entire focus of this was children's health. And so the concept is, how do we ensure that we exempt products that adults use that are, you know, continuing Western art culture, making sure you can drive your cars, all those kind of things, while still protecting children. So it's been and to Representative Smith's amendment, that's been a primary focus of mine as well, is to ensure that our children are not, you know, getting cadmium-based lead paint on their McDonald's toy, kind of an idea, like what was happening in the 90s. So yeah, I have had those conversations. They still, you know, they have their position, and I think we need to move a little bit from their position, but we still need to keep the focus on children.
Sure. Representative Faulkner.
Yeah, I'll be quick. I know we've got more business to get to. I just want to know, and perhaps the MPCA testifier could come up to help with this too. But my question is, are there any policies in place for disposal of the cadmium paints, treating it as hazardous waste, or how? I just want to know if it's okay if people are just washing their brushes down the sink, if they're wiping their brushes off and the paper towel has that and just throwing it in the garbage, or if they're supposed to treat the waste of this differently.
Mr. Dulko, welcome back. If you'll identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Kirk Adelka with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I would need to get back to you on that. You know, the greater concern that we're at is that physical touch when we're talking about this specific paint. Folks, the paint is usually in art spaces that are shared with multiple age groups, and, you know, there's that concern.
Representative Faulkner.
Sure. Yeah, I guess my concern on this is not that kids are buying expensive tubes of paint and then, you know, it's just what happens in the wastewater treatment and the landfills, et cetera, when these toxic chemicals, heavy metals are being introduced into the environment. So the impetus of my question. I was also wondering, I guess this for the bill author and regarding the amendment, why are we lumping paint in with keys? These seem to be two drastically different topics. I mean, I'm personally sympathetic to the paint argument. Our oldest child is a budding artist looking to go to art school, so we're in the middle of trying to plan, you know, tours, and I get that. My dad was a potter and the glazes. Cadmium produces, you know, reds and oranges, and so I fully understand that. So I'm just wondering, but then when we take a look at the auto industry, this is a completely different industry, different animal, different monster as far as regulations and how these products are used. So. To me, it kind of feels like we introduced this as the research and the original intent of the bill was paint, almost like a Trojan horse to just kind of stick keys in there as well and wrapping in the auto industry. So just wondering why we've combined the two.
Representative Olson.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question. So this amendment minus the new one that we just took on made the bill almost exactly like what the Senate was doing, and so just making same and similars easier, and also the fact that this bill that was originally passed 2 years ago included all those things together, and so it fits very perfectly to say, well, this was a little bit overarching. Concept was to protect children. That's exactly what we want to do. Let's make a couple exemptions. Here's the list of exemptions to this one bill that was a little bit overarching.
All right.
Final follow-up, sir.
Very small.
Yep. Go ahead, Representative.
I'm just wondering, as we work forward and go toward the Environment Committee next, of which I'll get to see you again, just wondering if we can just get a commitment to work with the MPCA again, just kind of sorting out some of these issues before we get to the Environment Committee.
Is that a question to the testifier or the bill author?
I should say member from the MPCA.
Sorry. For the author, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I will have another meeting with the MPCA between now and the environment, and we'll see if we can kind of hammer out some of this stuff, find a little bit of working ground. I think that the age restriction, if that's going to make people feel okay about this cadmium, I'm very devoted to the concept of ensuring that Western art culture continues in our state. I think a lot of us are. I think we still need to be able to drive our cars. We still need to be able to do that. And so I'll have another conversation with them and see if there's some wiggle room, something that we can do to make everyone feel good about this. But at the end of the day, we really, really need to continue driving our cars, writing with our pencils, and keep Western art culture thriving in the state of Minnesota.
And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 737, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Environment, Finance, and Policy. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? The motion prevails. Representative Olson, you are on your way.
We're going to revert back to House File 247, and I'm going to move to bring that back before the committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Representative Koznick, are you with us, sir?
I am, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your indulgence and grace this morning. You can hear me okay?
Representative Koznick, I am hoping that this bill will go rather quickly. You do have an author's DE1 amendment. Would you like me to move that to your House File 247?
Mr. Chair, yes, please.
I will move for Representative Koznick the DE1 amendment to House File 247. Representative Koznick, can you explain the bill and the DE for us so we can know what we're voting on? Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. This bill deals with racing fuel, so we will be very quick. As many of you may have experienced this morning, starting your snow blowers and other small engines, I had a situation in my district, and this is where the bill originates from. A new gas station that also carries groceries and stuff. The town of Elko, or city of Elko, Newmarket, was very excited to have a new gas station and the amenities they offer. However, current law only permits them to have one non-oxygenated gasoline storage, and since it's located next to Elko Speedway, the gas station decided to offer race fuel for all the racing that's done there, go-karts, cars, and all that kind of stuff. But it current law prohibited them from also offering a popular blend of higher non-oxygenated gasoline, normally the 91 blend. And so this bill, we wanted to permit petroleum marketers to offer two types of non-oxygenated gasoline, and that is what the bill does. The DE amendment just clarifies and cleans up the original draft language, and it is now permissive after talking with the department that this is an issue across the state, not just for towns that have a raceway located near them. So that is the difference with the DE amendment to the original draft, and I appreciate the committee's support.
Thank you, Representative Koznick. All those in favor of the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the form that the author desires, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Representative Koznick, any other comments on House File 247 before we ask for testimony this morning?
I think I pretty much covered it in the beginning, so if there's public testimony, that would be great.
Any members from the public wishing to testify on House File 247 as amended? Anyone wishing to testify on House File 247 as amended? Seeing none and hearing none, members, questions for Representative Koznick on House File 247 as amended? Representative Koznick, I am not seeing any member questions, so we will go to you for the final comment. But again, just for the record, this is going to be, let me just do one piece of housekeeping. I asked Representative Koznick to explain the bill, but he did not tell us where it's going. So House File 247, as amended, will be referred to the General Register. And when we get to the vote, that is the destination of that. Representative Herr, welcome.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate that the leeway for me as well. I did get stuck and took me a little. Thank God I had a shovel in the car. So just a couple quick questions, Representative Koznick, because I know I I'm not familiar with this particular industry and how this works. Can you just share with me, are these tanks underground tanks or are they tanks that sit above ground?
Representative Koznick.
Mr. Chair, I believe generally they are underground when you go to the gas stations. We're not mandating anybody install new tanks or anything. This is certainly just more permissive for any new gas stations or gas stations that would like to offer additional types of blends.
Representative Herr, follow-up.
And maybe I can just speak to Representative Koznick offline then, because I guess I was just curious as to the desire for having this and the need for it if you have to dig underground to put a second tank in order to do this. And I just didn't know if like that was part of the consideration of allowing this, but it would be quite a bit of a cost, I guess, for people to do this if they wanted to accommodate. So I'll just maybe talk to Representative Kosnick offline to just better understand the logistics of how this would be executed.
Thank you, Representative Hearn. And you're correct. It's going to be an independent business decision if they want to make that investment. So appreciate your willingness to visit with Representative Kosnick. Speaking of Representative Kosnick, any final comments, Representative Kosnick, before we take action on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I did have discussions with a couple of stakeholders. The Corn Growers Association reviewed this intent, and then also the petroleum marketers spoke favorably in my office to it, and I appreciate the committee's support.
I renew my motion that House File 247, as amended, be referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? The motion prevails. The next bill that we are going to be bringing up is Representative Ingen's bill, House File 325. And I will move, what we're going to do with that bill is we're going to hear the testimony and take care of business here. And then we're going to lay it over in the committee for some additional work. And we'll get to that discussion as we move on as to why there's going to be a layover. Representative Ingen, welcome to the committee. Thank you for your patience today, sir. If you will go ahead and talk to us about House File 325.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. So today, before I get into my bill, I want to share a quote with you from Kathleen Dial, who is the sister of Margaret Caldwell, who tragically passed away at the age of 29 after many years of substance abuse disorder when it came to flavored nitrous oxide. Her quote says, "She would tell us, 'I'm buying this legally, and I'm not doing anything wrong with this.'" That's what we're trying to solve here today, members. We right now have the ability in this state to go to a tobacco store or Walmart or purchase on Amazon flavored nitrous oxide, which is it's knowingly being sold as a food additive or something that can be used in culinary arts, but with the guise of also having it be for personal use. And there are many side effects and ramifications for having taken nitrous oxide or laughing gas for extended periods of time, and that includes B12 deficiency and psychological, neurological, and heart-related issues. So today, my bill hopes to curtail this massive spike in use that we've seen across the country. I believe that there was a 56% increase in the past 2 years of use amongst Generation Z. So trying to stop this this galaxy gas, and I know I've spoken with a couple other members on this, but these are also being sold with gas masks for inhalant purposes. This is blatant. It's in our face. It's obvious that it is not about culinary arts, and we should do something about it today. So I look forward to discussion.
Representative Inge, do you have any testifiers today?
I don't believe so. I was going to bring in one of these galaxy gases, but they were out at the local tobacco store that I stopped in.
All right. Well, then we'll ask if there's any members of the public who are here today that would like to testify on House File 325, the business before the committee at this time. Anyone wishing to testify on House File 325? Seeing none, we'll move to member discussion. Members, Representative Katiza Watoon.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Representative Ingen, for bringing this bill forward. I just have a quick question, and I leaned over to my resident EMT here, Representative Hewitt, to ask, in medical situations, I'm not sure if they utilize flavored nitrous oxide to help either, he suggested maybe a dental procedure where they're going to have a child go under for a cavity or tooth removal or something like that. Do they utilize it or if it is just like the plain non-flavored gas? And if it is flavored, will we have an exemption for medical professionals to still have access?
Representative Ingen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that question. It's 100% valid. We want to make sure that we're not discluding this use for legitimate medical purposes. From my understanding and from my research, they're actually adding some sort of it almost looks like a chapstick container, and that's what gives that flavor to maybe a kid who's undergoing surgery or being seen for those medical reasons. But I'd be happy to work with you offline on this and see if we have that language correct so that it can continue to be used in those types of circumstances.
Chair, excuse me, Chair Katiza-Watun, I'm trying to use your formal title here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for that, Representative Engen. It's definitely something that I'm interested in. I know that it's offered to people when they're in labor. I had a personal experience that I'm not going to share on the record, but we can talk offline about it. It's a pretty funny thing.
Any other member questions? Representative Hewitt, I kind of thought you might be weighing in on this since you were referenced by the previous member.
No, this isn't about medical stuff. This is more about, Mr. Chair, thank you. And Representative Engen, just curious, is this flavored stuff, have you found in your research, just this question I have, did you find anything where the bakers, I know this is used in whipped cream, I believe, or other things that need to be compressed, is that what it's used for? And are bakers using the flavored stuff? I'm just curious.
Representative Engen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question. I have seen circumstances in which it's used for maybe a margarita mix, or it's used for certain infusions of flavor to a beverage. But I've not seen it widely used amongst the profession. It really is being sold and marketed as something for personal use as an inhalant. And I actually have some pictures here, and I wish that they were in color because these things are obviously being marketed and geared towards children. Here's a vanilla cupcake flavor. There's a strawberry flavor. This is $54 on Amazon and Walmart.com. And they list 99.99% purity for personal use. So even though they're pretending that this isn't for inhalant purposes.
It's Representative Engen, we do have this handout, if that's one you were referencing, that was in members' packets.
That is one of them, yes, yep. Mr. Chair.
Representative Hewitt, follow up?
Yeah, real quick, Chair, thank you, and thank you, Representative Engen. Yeah, this, I've been on scenes where these bottles have been everywhere. This stuff has a short life, so we could treat it real quick, but if we're not there, we're not going to be able to help them. It can hamper breathing, but interesting bill. I'll be looking forward to seeing more on it.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Rep. Engen. Yeah, it is an interesting bill. I don't really know anything about it, so this is just an open question. Maybe we should talk offline about this. But, I mean, in Commerce Committee, we regulate substances that intoxicate people all the time. So, and obviously, we don't want this to go to children. That's, I think, something we can all agree on. But why kind of an outright ban rather than adding restrictions? I mean, you mentioned you went to a tobacco shop, right? They sell all kinds of stuff there that intoxicate people that are legal within certain realms. Just like open question, like why that route instead of just like an open ban?
Representative Engen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question. Yeah, you definitely don't want to take a sledgehammer to a scalpel-based issue that you could try to find a different avenue on. But this is so pervasive and it's so widely accessible and available that I believe that that's the best form of action. And other states are pursuing similar legislation to try to curtail this.
Representative West has a question, and he's on Zoom. Representative West, followed by Representative Reimer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Engen, for bringing this bill forward. I'm generally opposed to flavor bans for most things, but what you lay out here is the case in Minnesota. It's a dangerous substance that will kill you, unlike THC, so approaching flavor ban in this sense for retail sale makes a lot of sense. I would be opposed to any kind of outright ban on the retail sale of this because people would use it for non-inhalant purposes, but flavoring obviously is primarily inhalant purposes, and I think it's my understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that this only applies to selling direct to consumers. So say a restaurant wanted to do a margarita with a, enhanced flavor whip on top, that restaurant would still be able to purchase this, or is that not the case in this bill? Thank you, Mr. Chair, and no follow-up.
We'll ask the bill author, Representative Engen.
Yeah, that is how the bill is currently structured, that if you are a consumer, you cannot purchase the flavored nitrous oxide or galaxy gas, as it's being referred to. But if you are a business, you can still purchase that.
So it's still available, Representative Engen, for commercial application, I think is what it boils down
That's
to
correct.
With Representative West's question. Very good. Representative West, follow-up? Representative Ryan?
No, Mr. Chair.
Oh, there we are. Representative West, go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Reimer, followed by Representative Hurd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative, for bringing this bill to the table.
you know, I'm always a little bit skeptical about kind of, I don't know, panic banning a product based on, you know, rhetoric and not rhetoric, but like there are real cases of kids being impacted by this, obviously. You know, you'd had a testifier that was ready to kind of talk about that. Are there any, I guess, statistics on a statewide level or nationally about how many kids this is actually hospitalizing or killing?
Representative Ingen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if you would indulge me for just a second here, I know I have that stat written down amongst my slew of papers here. I want to say that it's 11 million Gen Zers that have admitted to use or that the, let me find this stat here. 2024 article in the journal Addiction noted that 11.4 million Gen Zers are using currently. So that's a staggering number. It's gone up 56% in the past 2 years alone for use. And that's why we're trying to address this with such a heavy outright ban of that flavored to consumer sale.
Representative Ingen, can you clarify 11.1 million? What was the...
11.4 million Gen Zers are using.
Okay, so that's a pretty big number then.
It's a huge number.
Representative Reimer, follow-up?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative. Yeah, so with 11 million uses, I would expect to the death or hospitalized epidemic, I would expect to be pretty massive as well. Is there any numbers about that specifically? I mean, obviously 11 million people using a product that is potentially dangerous is of concern, but you know, if it's extremely dangerous, I would expect a massive increase in hospitalization.
Representative Ingen. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question. I don't know those numbers offhand here, but I mean, I started out with a family who lost a loved one, a 29-year-old individual who passed away tragically because she was battling with substance abuse disorder and was of the belief that this was a safe high. And that's how it's being marketed currently. It's galaxy gas. It's fun. It's laughing gas. It's something that hospitals use. It can't be that bad. But over an extended period of time, the more you use this, the worse it is for you. And so that's why we're trying to curtail this now, so we can quell that epidemic in hospitalizations and potential death that could be on the horizon.
Representative Herr, followed by Representative Cha.
Thank you, Chair. And Representative Ingen, maybe this is not necessarily a question for you, but maybe for this body to consider that if we are supporting bans on this type of products, that I hope that you will all join in and support Representative Cha's bill and the ban on flavored tobaccos. If you notice the price here, these products, this is $80. A price of a pack of cigarette is $15. That this is actually much more expensive and it's being bought at that level. I know that we already have some restrictions on cigarettes, but we know that in those, it is flavors are targeted towards, and menthols are targeted towards young people, and the same with flavored cannabis. And so I would like for us to sort of think about in totality what it means when we're trying to keep our children safe. And I don't know, Representative Ingen, if maybe there's a way that maybe we should probably be packaging some of these bills together to protect children when they're using these substances to get a high off of. So just a thought for the committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Herr. Representative Cha.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Ingen, thank you for bringing this bill forward. I guess my question to you is would you also support flavor ban on vapes and vaping products?
Representative Ingen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question. I think it's outside the realm of what I'm trying to do with this bill, which is save kids from neurological and cardiovascular damage from extended long-term use of this. But the FDA actually came out with a recent study showing that flavored non-tobacco nicotine-based products are quelling or getting people off of tobacco-based carcinogenic products. So I think that's a completely separate discussion to have, but I'm still willing to have that offline.
I will remind members that the bill is going to be laid over, and if you have individual questions, it might be a great opportunity to visit with the bill author on that. But Representative Cha, I will give you a follow-up, and then we'll go to Representative Faulkner.
Well, thank you for that answer, and definitely I would like to have an offline conversation, because when we're talking about flavored tobacco, flavored products and stuff that are impacting our youth and Minnesotan children, I think that we should be inclusive of all products and just not selective. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Chau. Representative Faulkner.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Representative Ingen, for bringing this forward. And this is probably a short question. I'm just wondering if Other states are enacting similar bills. Looking at this, does your language mimic other states? Just like, you know, as a test case, what's going on out there and how are we matching up with others?
Representative Ingen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question. I know Florida is pursuing legislation. This is not from another state. This was written just with nonpartisan staff. And we kind of worked through it, you know, whether or not it was going to be an outright ban of sale to a direct consumer. But we determined that the best path forward was through that flavored route, which is really what's being geared towards kids and what's being sold behind the counter at a local tobacco store, at Walmart, on Amazon, on eBay. So we went that route. But other states are pursuing similar legislation right now.
All right, thank you. All right, with that, and seeing no other member questions, we'll lay the bill over at this time. Thank you, Representative Ingen. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And our final bill for the morning is House File 1330, which is the bill author is a member of the committee, Representative Van Binsberg. And Representative Van Binsberg, would you like to move your bill? And I believe we are going to be sending this one as well to the General Register. It's another petroleum-related bill. So, Representative Van Binsberg, if you want to just go ahead and make that motion.
I would, sir. Thank you.
All right. So the motion by Representative Van Binsberg is to re-refer House File 1330 to the General Register. With that, Representative Van Binsberg, we will have you go ahead and speak to House File 1330 for us.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of this committee. As Representative Driscoll said, I am Scott Van Binsbergen, and I'm here to present House File 1330, which is also co-authored by Representative Hewitt. This is a bipartisan bill. House File 1330 aligns Minnesota with recently modernized gasoline specifications across the country. These standards are set by the American Society of Testing and Materials. Many of the old standards are based upon data from the 1960s and 1970s. These updated standards are based off of recent data. Overall, these updates are technical and they allow for more efficiency. Many states in the country automatically adopt the latest recommendations. However, Minnesota needs to make their updates legislatively, and that's why we're here today. Here to explain the bill in greater detail is Mike Carbo. Mike is the Midwest Regional Director with API.
Thank you, Representative Van Binsbergen. And Mr. Carbo, if you'll identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Mike Carbo, and I'm the Midwest Region Director for the American Petroleum Institute. API represents all segments of America's oil and natural gas industry, which supports more than 11 million U.S. jobs. Our nearly 600 members produce, process, and distribute the majority of the nation's energy. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today in support of House File 1330. API was formed in 1919 as a standard-setting organization and is a global leader in convening subject matter experts across segments to establish, maintain, and distribute consensus standards for the oil and gas industry. In its first 100 years, API has developed more than 800 standards to enhance operational safety, environmental protection, and sustainability across the industry, especially through their standards being adopted globally. API and its members work closely with ASTM International, formerly the American Society of Testing Materials, commonly abbreviated as ASTM, to develop standards that are consistent, uniform, and of high quality, help products meet high levels of performance and safety, define the specific manufacturing process of a material, and determine the exact chemical composition of a material. In December 2023, ASTM approved changes to the gasoline specification of D4814, which is a standard specification for automotive spark ignition engine fuel, and they were published in April of 2024 with a modification in July. Most states adopt the latest specification either through a direct adoption of the latest version of a standard or through the adoption of NIST Handbook 130 automatically. But 18 states reference older versions and thus need to adopt either rules or make legislative changes, which includes Minnesota, along with fellow and neighboring states of Iowa, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. South Dakota and Iowa have already completed their rulemaking, while Wisconsin's is ongoing but has a waiver to operate under the new standard until the rulemaking is completed. ASTM revised the gasoline specification and included changes to the volatility of the fuel in many states, as well as the changes to the evaporated distillation temperature requirements for gasoline ethanol blended fuels. Changes to these tables have not happened in several decades, and the temperature data supporting the original requirements are from the 1950s to the 1970s. The recently adopted changes are based on temperature data from across the country from 1996 to 2015. Additionally, the specification revisions to the evaporated distillation temperature requirements for winter fuels was included as well, and this is a technical requirement to allow more efficient refinery operations, slightly higher gasoline volume, and less risk of refinery noncompliance without impacting consumer vehicle performance. There is no known opposition to the update in Minnesota, the region, or the rest of the country. We thank Representative Van Binsbergen for his leadership on this issue, which ensures consistent and uniform standards in the marketplace. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carbo. Members, questions of Mr. Carbo or the bill author on House File 1330? No. Representative Hewitt, as a co-author, do you have anything that you'd like to add?
Yes, sir.
No, I think the everybody said it the way I was understood. This is also important to one of my larger employers in the area.
Okay. So that's where we're at. With that, is there any members of the public wishing to testify on House File 1330? Anyone wishing to testify on House File 1330, the matter before the committee at this time? Seeing none and hearing none, Representative Van Binsbergen, we will give you the final word, and then we will move to a vote.
Thank you. I think appreciate your testimony, and thank you, sir.
All right. With that, Representative Van Binsbergen renews his motion that House File 1330 be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? The motion prevails. And members, we took care of all of our business today, and I thank you all for your efforts to get here on this. And Thursday, we are going to hear from Representative Stevenson and others that he's been working with on an informational meeting on social districts. Anoka's had one for a while. We have a few bills that have been introduced of communities that are looking for that. And because it's a newer concept, that we thought would be a good idea to be able to get some conversation going on that. Representative Stevenson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm excited to tell you all about the Anoka Social District. I did want to say to the committee, you know, we do have a committee budget, and I really think this is an instance where some field research would be really helpful.
Hear, hear.
To that idea, Representative Stevenson, I sat on the committee when you chaired for 4 years, and I do not ever remember us expending money on similar kinds of endeavors. Just for the record, Representative Stevenson.
Well, Mr. Chair, this is your opportunity to do better than me.
I will refrain from comment. We will talk about more on Thursday about what next week's landscape looks like and where we are at with that. So, again, with my thanks and appreciation, there is no other business for the committee. We are adjourned. Thank you.